The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Steve Cracknell, CEO of InSig AI, and the ticker there is INSG. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Hi, good morning. Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a new company listed, reverse takeover, very hot sector, and we'll dig into the details in a bit. But before we do, Steve, for people maybe not aware of you, could you just give us a brief summary as to what InSig AI is all about, please?
Sure, Justin. Yeah, so we're a machine learning solutions company, and we target the asset management industry to help organize and structure their data in a way in which makes it readily accessible for them to make good investment decisions. That's certainly the 30-second elevator pitch.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, we all hear now about AI, machine learning. And so you're saying, looking at the investment sort of field, the asset managers, and they are your customers, are they?
Yes, that's a primary focus. I mean, what we've observed in the market is that, you know, you have what we call the large, you know, investment banks, you know, the Blackstones, BlackRock, Goldman's, JP Morgan. They've spent a lot of money and time investing in cloud-based infrastructure, machine learning infrastructure. But when you look at the kind of the small to mid-sized asset management firms who've always been what we would classify as really smart investors who have made, you know, developed interesting strategies, they haven't, in our opinion, taken full advantage of the available modern technologies that they can use, and certainly not on the machine learning and an AI side of the spectrum, you know, put themselves in a position where they can use tech to help them make better investment decisions.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned some of the big boys already have this. Do they already use AI machine learning?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, you know, if I go back to my days when I was at Goldman's back in the early part of 2000, they certainly had very centralized database infrastructures, which allowed, you know, many different groups to use data centrally to build algorithms on top of. And that was, I guess, even before cloud computing became a thing. But with Amazon Web Services, with Azure now becoming much more readily accessible to business and more affordable, it means that the prospect of doing computationally heavy algorithms becomes something easy to do. And I think also, you know, historically, the concept of having a data scientist was only for a really specialist industry. Now, you know, data scientists are, I wouldn't say readily available, but they're much more accessible to most businesses, whereas before it was in the context of, you know, very specialist, you know, business types. So I think the combination of the technology becoming more accessible and that there's more access to data engineers and data scientists to help companies, it certainly increased the opportunity in this space.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that opportunity. I mean, you know, is there a lot of appetite amongst a smaller sort of, or, you know, mid-sized to smaller sort of asset managers? And what's the size of the opportunity for you?
I mean, you know, I think the appetite is massive. And interestingly enough, you know, most of the meetings we have with asset management firms is to say, look, we want to develop an AI strategy. And then the first question we ask is, you know, how do you store your data? And they'll say, it's in a bunch of spreadsheets, or it's in a series of files and folders, and it's a kind of distributed, you know, setup. So the first challenge is really to get all of your content and data into a centralized data infrastructure, which really isn't anything to do with machine learning. It's really just to structure the information in order to do something. And that kind of comes as a surprise to a lot of our clients, is that they're saying, well, isn't AI some kind of magic that can just sort it out? And the short answer is no. You know, machine learning and AI is a capability that you can bring to your data once you've got it into a format that's machine readable. Once you've done that, that's when it actually becomes quite exciting, because part of, you know, what we believe is that, you know, machines aren't going to replace humans anytime soon. And the principle behind using a machine learning infrastructure is to help, you know, humans make better decisions more quickly. And if you can imagine, you know, if you have to read through 250 annual reports, you know, any human can do it, but it's going to take them a long time. But if you can train an algorithm to read through the 250 reports and pull out the core pieces of information that you need, so you can make a decision in say 5 minutes, all of a sudden, you know, if you have a strategy that doesn't work, you can say, great, I'm not going to pursue it. Or on the flip side, if you've got evidence now that supports your strategy, you can execute more quickly. So I guess the opportunity that we see is building this bridge between, you know, the potential that machine learning and AI has and what we call, you know, smart, sophisticated investors. You know, put the tech in your hands without having to be a technologist. That's really where we're trying to position ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And essentially, once you've organized the data and you store it properly, and then you start mining it and manipulating it in some way and analyzing it. So that's what they're looking for. That's what it could do. It could sort of analyze trends very quickly and help them sort through that data like that, and it'll make decisions faster.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly one example where you could say, well, I want to analyze something. I'm trying to look for patterns that, you know, potentially I might not spot as a human. Mm. On the converse, all of our clients already have an investment strategy, and they have an investment strategy based on a set of assumptions or a set of factors. You know, the first port of call is to say, okay, let's see if we can replicate this, in Python, you know, write it in Python code. Let's see if we can replicate some of the decisions you make at a technical level. And A, that helps them get to a decision more quickly. But then secondly, it's to say, well, let's explore other areas that potentially, you know, you hadn't explored because you didn't have time to do so, or you didn't have the computational power to do so. And that's where we spend a lot of our time. It's not necessarily telling someone what to do better. It's to say, let's make you faster, and then let's open you up to other decisions that you might not have got around to because of time constraints.
Yeah, yeah. And so explain a bit about the company, Insig AI. How long have you been around? Are you sort of listed in May? Take us through a bit of a backstory, if you could, and where are you at the moment?
Great. So yeah, so we officially listed in May, May 15th was a good day. And, you know, prior to that, Insight Capital Partners was the company that was set up at the end of 2018. We started as a consultancy, you know, in the sense of going into, you know, single clients, looking at their data infrastructure, looking at what they were doing and trying to improve their methodologies. After we had, you know, consulted to a number of different clients, we were seeing the same problems or the same challenges appear again and again. And that was the point at which we started discussions with, then it was Catena Group, and they were already listed on AIM. And we had a decision to make. It's to say, well, we have a known problem. We have a known set of clients that want to use our technologies and want to use us as a resource. How do we scale more quickly, and how do we get, our consulting skills packaged into a product offering? And that was really the decision to list the company or do the reverse takeover, and we backed into Catena Group. If anyone's ever been through an RTO and then an RPO subsequent, it's a baptism of fire. There's a lot to learn. Having spent a lot of time just running tech companies, doing this as well was an interesting experience. But what I think has been amazing for us is, you know, we're one of the very few, if only, fintech AR companies listed on AIM. We're a UK-based, London-centered business servicing, you know, the financial center of the world. And having been listed has fundamentally helped us get in front of big-name clients. Whereas previously, as a small startup or a small company, bigger names are a little bit cautious to say, well, if we're going to use your tech, how do we know you're going to be around in the next, you know, couple of years? So, I mean, that's been a big kind of step up for us, where we can get in front of blue chip names credibly to pitch and present our products.
Yeah, yeah. And so you've gone from, like you say, consultancy to individual companies to having a product now. And how does that work? The revenue model on that, is it software as a service, or how does it work?
So we still have a consulting component. I mean, each of our clients tends to have a slightly different data set or slightly different approach to the way they invest. So we haven't given up on the consulting piece. So what we're doing is we have a product framework. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have a data ingestion framework where we can ingest data from multiple different feeds, whether it's, you know, third-party feeds and or the the client's proprietary data. I mean, that's, I guess, the starting point. And then on top of that, we have different sets of analytical tools, and we package them to, I guess, serve our clients' specific requirements. Now, we had a decision to make a year and a half ago, which was to say, do we try and create a standard, easy off-the-shelf, you know, one-size-fits-all product, or do we go the slightly more bespoke route? The reason we've gone the slightly more bespoke route is that these nuanced data sets and nuanced decisions that different managers make mean that we have to have the flexibility in our framework, and that's really how we've designed it. Phase two of that is once we've set companies up and once they are set up with their data in our infrastructure, it actually creates quite a sticky offering. Because as soon as they start to see the value of what the tool does with their own data, the relationship changes very quickly, and there's a much higher degree of trust. And then what we've, I guess, really enjoyed is the ability to then explore clients' data in a way in which that, you know, they would typically not have done so had it just been a, here's a fixed application, off you go, sort yourself out. Mm. And that certainly worked well for us for the last, I guess, part of this year. I mean, in addition to the Portfolio Insights tool that we have, which is really around portfolio construction using machine learning models, we've developed an ESG research tool. Mm. And this is really off the back of massive demand in the market around, you know, companies, investors, insurance companies needing to validate and justify their investment decisions in an ESG sensitive environment. So again, we've been able to leverage our data infrastructure to bring in annual reports, earnings call transcripts, sustainability reports, ESG reports, and then make that data easily available to investment managers.
Yeah. And you mentioned there about the products, and your flagship sort of portfolio, isn't it? It's just released 2.0, have you?
That's correct, yes. Yeah. So that's been, you know, been out in the market for probably just over a year and a bit since, version 1.0 has kind of been out and about for a while. We've just, you know, reskinned the application. We've added much more flexibility around filtering in terms of private data sets. And then we've added additional machine learning models to the system. We've also added an ESG component to it. So the demand we've been seeing is that, you know, if we look back historically, a lot of the investment decisions around what signals can we generate, what patterns and trends can we identify using pure financial metrics. Mm-hmm. Adding in ESG metrics is really where we've seen, I guess, the next phase of demand coming in, and how do you overlay that over an investment strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. And what is demand like at the moment? I mean, at what level are you pitching? Do you have live clients? What stage are you at?
Yeah, so we have a handful of live clients using both products, mm-hmm. But the demand we're getting to get in front of people is massive. And for anyone that's ever gone through the, you know, setting up a company, going into a startup phase, and then becoming a little bit more established, you know, initially you do a lot of knocking on doors and people not so keen to see you. Now we're getting referrals through our existing client base and a lot of kind of calls coming into us. So, I mean, if I think of the month ahead, October is an incredibly busy month presenting to clients, both on our ESG research tool and Portfolio Insights. I guess it's an interesting journey for us because part of it initially is around discovery. What is it that people want? And then when you find a combination of things that you know people want, it's now, you know, finding the time to get in front of those folks and convert them into using the product. So that's really the stage we're at now.
Yeah. And looking forward, Steve, what are you sort of hoping to achieve maybe over the next, you know, 6-12 months or further down the line?
So, I mean, given the two products we have, I mean, really this next quarter for us is a big quarter to get this product into the hands of as many new clients as we can. There's a, you know, in the tech development space, there's getting to a point where your system is, you know, production steady enough to handle more and more people coming on board. You know, we definitely feel we're in that phase. And I guess there's two bits to it. One is to get the, you know, Portfolio 2.0 and ESG 1.0 into the hands of, you know, many more clients over the next quarter. But then part of our development process is to react to requests that we're getting as people start to use more and more of the functionality. And that's kind of a key part of our design principle. We don't pretend to have perfect foresight around what everybody wants, but we definitely listen very intently to, you know, what are the signals, what is the feedback that we're getting around the product and the usability of it, and then baking that into the next, you know, iterations of the system. I mean, I think so that's the product strategy. You know, we have a very strong focus on private company data. You know, we've been working on, you know, populating our database with companies that aren't easily available, you know, through the standard resources, MSCI and Thomson Reuters and Bloomberg. And that's by, you know, getting information from company websites, downloading annual reports, getting that information into a centralized database. We're seeing a big demand there. So that's, I guess, a data strategy. And then in terms of our growth, you know, we certainly are looking at interesting tech companies that could complement what we're doing, and to bring them into kind of the INSIG portfolio, or into the INSIG, you know, business. Mm-hmm. And that's also one of the advantages of being a listed entity, is that we have, you know, paper that we can issue to potentially look at buying companies. So, those are the, I guess that's a lot, but definitely, you know, grow and entrench the two primary products that we have, you know, expand our data repository with private company data, and then look at potential, you know, expansion based on acquisition in the coming months.
Yeah, absolutely marvelous stuff. Well, it's good to chat to you. I got to point out on the front page of Vox Markets here, there's a list of 10 companies that are most followed. That changes all the time. There's obviously big follow buttons next to them. So to get on that list, hopefully, if you could, Steve, give me three quick reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add INSIG AI to their watch list, please.
My top three would be the following, is that I believe we're the only UK fintech listed on AIM that specializes in machine learning and AI. We're perfectly positioned to deliver machine learning and AI products to financial market companies focused on ESG. And, you know, we're a young and exciting company, and we're on a massive growth trajectory. So if you want to see something exciting, click follow today.
Excellent stuff, Steve. Good to chat to you. And like I say, exciting journey. Hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Thank you, Justin. Appreciate the time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.